All right, so without further ado, the reason why we are here tonight, introducing our speaker for this evening from Santa Maria, Orchid, I don't know, I think Santa Maria or Orchid, one or the other, Santa Maria, Eddie W.
How y'all doing? My name is Eddie and I'm an alcoholic. I guess I'm going to start at the beginning. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So, I was born and raised in Gulfport, Mississippi. Most people know Biloxi. Gulfport is right next door, and we're better than Biloxi. Just like to throw that out there. I was sent to a foster home when I was 4 years old. Don't know all the details of that, but I think that started me on my path to hating life. Some people have good experiences in foster homes. Some people have bad. Mine turned out to be terrible. I went there with my younger brother, who's a year younger than I am, and our foster parents really didn't want us. They weren't the loving kind. So it was a hard childhood. They moved us into the white neighborhoods in the 70s in Gulfport, Mississippi, when I was like 12. It wasn't easy. They did not want us there. So I had to try to make friends. And the friends that I gravitated towards were the bad boys and the bad girls, too. I like the bad girls. They like to drink and use drugs. And so that started me out on the path that I was on. If they said drink something, I drank it. If they said use something, I used it. Back in the days, we used to do a lot of speed. Black mollies, yellow mollies. I don't know if they still have that stuff anymore. Purple microdots. Just all kind of crazy stuff. And I was the guy who they would come to and say, "Hey Eddie, try this," and I'd be like, "Okay, cool, let's do it." Didn't care what it did, if I died or not. I mean, my life was my life wasn't good at home. I was the oldest foster child, so I got beaten regularly. I got beaten for stuff that I did. I got beaten for the stuff that my younger foster siblings did. I had four younger foster siblings. One sister, three brothers, including my brother. My youngest brother, they got him when he was a day old. And of course he was the favorite. And they treated him that way. I hated him. Could not stand him. His name was Anthony. Couldn't stand him. I get mad at people named Anthony to this freaking day. Because I couldn't stand him. He used to get me in trouble all the time. So I started out drinking to fit in. Then I liked it. It was a great escape from that, from everything that I was going through in the house. And I continued drinking into my early adulthood. And doing drugs too. I got all burned up here. You can see some of it here on my hand. Got burned up on my feet because I was in the utility room huffing gas. huffing gasoline from the gas can, and somebody told me that I should share this. I never do. But I was in the utility room huffing gas from the gas can, and I passed out, and we had a hot water heater in there that that ran from natural gas, and of course that blew up and caught me on fire, and I had second and third degree burns on all my hands, both my feet, and I was in the hospital for a little more than 3 weeks. My foster parents didn't even take me to the hospital. The lady down the street did. She threw me in her car and took me to the hospital. That didn't stop me from drinking and using drugs. I mean, I was still having fun. I went to Job Corps. I think they still have it. I went to Job Corps when I was 18. Because in foster care, when you turn 18, you you age out of the system, and they no longer pay the foster parents. So they threw me out of the house when I was 18. So I went to Job Corps, and I lived on campus. And in Job Corps, I had a hell of a time. The Job Corps was located right in the middle of a whole bunch of different kind of clubs. So I could go from one club to the other. We got passes every weekend. Of course, I didn't because I was always in trouble. So I had a friend who was taller, bigger than me. And we had fences up, but they weren't to keep us in. They were to keep people from coming in from the outside. So I would regularly go under the fence because I was so little, and he would regularly go over the fence because we were both in trouble all the time. And we would go out and we would get drunk. And we would get loaded, and we went to the club, and we just had a freaking ball. I want to tell the newcomers, and I want to welcome the newcomers, and I want to welcome everybody that's here, and thank you for coming out tonight. And I want to congratulate you for your 8 years. It's a big deal. But yeah. I had fun for a while. If I didn't have fun, I wouldn't have done it. I had fun until it stopped being fun. I had another friend that that used to tell me that we could just keep on having fun, and we could keep going and keep drinking and using drugs no matter what happened. You know, I got into some trouble in Mississippi for selling marijuana. I got a $2,000 fine for that. They don't like that kind of shit in Mississippi. Got a $2,000 fine for that, and got 2 years probation. I ended up in this place called the Restitution Center because I wasn't paying restitution, and they wanted to send me to Parchman State Penitentiary. And this was the alternative because in Mississippi, they wanted their money, and they couldn't make it while I was in Parchman State Penitentiary. They make you work for nothing. So they wanted their money. So they sent me to the restitution center, so I would pay them their money back. They made me go to work and give them my paycheck to pay them their money back. While I was in there, I met a friend, a white guy. His dad was the Grand Wizard of the Invisible Empire of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. The only black guy that he liked. I wouldn't take no shit from him. But I mention that because after I paid off my restitution and got out of there, him and I decided to come to California. He said we had jobs out here. And since I was not enjoying my life in Mississippi, I came out to California. Because I believe that I could start over. I always talk about relocation and trying to run from yourself and taking a trip, and you know, and that's what I did because I thought if I came out to California, nobody knew me and I could start all over and maybe I could control this crazy drinking habit that I had. I didn't want to stop it. I just wanted to control it. I just wanted to stop getting in trouble for it. That shit didn't happen because I brought me with me. So when I came out here, I rented a room from these people, and I continued my drinking. The first thing I did was, I got a job on a car lot. This guy gave me a job on working on his car lot, cleaning his cars. Gave me a room in the loft over the garage. And the first thing that I did as soon as he paid me was go and get me some beer and some Smirnoff 100 proof vodka, because that was my drink. Love Smirnoff 100 proof vodka. So that's what I did. And I continued to get drunk. They ended up giving me a room in the house with the guy who was the the mechanic on the car lot, and I summarily got kicked out of his house because I wouldn't stop drinking. I got drunk all the time. I wouldn't stop drinking. It wasn't my fault. They was hating on me, and they kicked me out because they were racist. They didn't like me. That was my thoughts. So I got into a room in somebody else's house, and I did the same shit because that's what I do. Doing the same thing over and over and over, and I expected a different result from it because, you know, I'm grown and I can do what I want. And the man that owned the house said, you really need to quit bringing all that alcohol in my house. And I said, man, I'm paying you rent. I can do whatever I want. It's my room. I can do whatever I want. And so when I got in trouble and lost my job, he said, okay, well, this is my house and I'm kicking your ass out. You got to go. So he kicked me out of the house. So I ended up homeless on the streets of Los Angeles. I met a few friends while I was homeless. One of them was a girl, and we used to go to the soup kitchen, and and she was telling me about this club that she was going to, and how all these men were hitting on her. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I can make me some money off of this, because that was my thought pattern. So that's why I went to the club. It turned out to be an Alano club. It was an AA club. Who'd have thunk it? So I didn't go there to get sober. I went there because, you know. But I stayed there for a while, and the people were nice and tripped me out. And I'm like, who the hell are these people, and what do they want, and why do they keep on telling me to come back, and already hugging me when I come in the door? What the hell? What do they want? Because I always thought somebody wanted something from me. They were nice. They had to want something from me. But I stayed for a while. I stayed, and my first mistake was to do what they call in here a 13th step. So there was this woman in there who was 16 years older than me, and she showed some interest in me, and she was 2 years sober, and I summarily got into a relationship with her, which I was not supposed to do. That was a bad idea. Bad idea. I was still living on the streets, and I moved into her house, and she had all the power in the world and could tell me to do whatever she wanted me to do, and I didn't like that, but she had all the power in the world. And I stayed sober for 2 years. And then I thought that I could do it again. Well, first I thought, well, you know what? I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to stop drinking. That was my problem. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to stop smoking weed, because that wasn't really a problem. It was pretty good. So I started smoking weed. And then, since I was dealing with the drug dealer, and the drug dealer had some crack, I'm like, yeah, might as well just do a little bit of crack. The weed's not good enough. So I started, doing a little bit of crack. Yeah, that little bit of crack turned into a whole bunch. And then I ended up doing exactly what I wanted to do in the first place, which was drink. And the woman that I was with, who was still sober, allowed it. She allowed me to drink and use drugs, even in her house. She even gave me money to do it. It's a bad idea, fellas. It's a bad idea. I ended up leaving her, and I went to go live with some guys. I got sober again. Well, I went to they called it a recovery home back then. It's called a Way Back In. for a couple of reasons. It's, you know, it's the way back into life, and it was like sometimes they say the last house on the block. This was literally the last house on the block. And I would, and I went in there, and I was in there for, I think, 8 months. And I was doing well, and then I started working for a friend, and he was smoking weed, and I started smoking weed again. Because I thought I had all the answers, and I thought I was good. So I left that recovery home, and I went back to that woman that I shouldn't have gone back to. And I started drinking again, and she allowed it again. On February 1st, 1992, I went to work. I actually had a job, and I went to work. And I worked 12 hours, and I got off at 12 midnight. And as soon as I got off work, I started drinking. And the guy that I was working with said, "Hey, Eddie, you want to do some dope?" And I was like, "Yeah, I could smoke some weed." He wasn't talking about weed. Mm-hmm. He was talking about crack. Mm-hmm. I'm not the kind to turn down free drugs. So I started smoking crack. I started drinking. I started drinking the alcohol. And I got very, very intoxicated. I went home to that woman. And she was really pissed off that I was coming home so late. And she was really, really pissed off that I came home so late drunk and loaded. And she told me, and we started arguing. And I told her that I was going to do exactly what I always did. I told her I was leaving. I'm out of here. I'm not putting up with this shit. I'm running like I always do. And she said, "You're not running. You're not leaving. You're not going to leave me again," because I left her the first time. She said, "You're not going to leave me again." And she pulled out a knife and she locked the door. I wasn't going for that. So I don't remember all the detail of this, but I ended up killing that woman. And I ended up in prison for murder. And I was in prison for 26 years. I got sober the day after that. I haven't had a drink or a drug since the day I committed that murder. But yeah, I did 26 years in prison. I spent most of the time in CMC, and most of that time I wasn't in Alcoholics Anonymous. Most of that time I was just running on the dry drunk. I was mean as hell, I was mad as hell, and all y'all can see how little I am, but I didn't take no shit from nobody, because I just didn't care. I didn't care whether I lived or died. So, you know, all the threats, all the stuff that they had going on, it's like, I don't care. They threatened me. I told them, "Dude, if you're not willing to kill me, don't come up in here, because I have nothing, got nothing to lose. I'm never going to get out, and I don't care." And that's the way that I lived my life. I was very, very extremely angry, and I didn't know why. I had no idea why. I talked to a lot of psychiatrists, and most of them in there just said, "Well, you know, you're angry, and how does that make you feel?" I said, "It makes me feel angry. It makes me feel fucking angry that you're asking me how it makes me feel. I'm freaking angry. I'm pissed off." I just didn't know. I didn't know why. All I know is that I was hating life, and life wasn't fair. And I couldn't understand why a God that that a whole lot of the times I didn't believe in, other times I hated for putting me on this earth. And I teeter-totter between that for a long time. And I just couldn't understand it. And then I started going... started going to AA in prison. And I started taking it very seriously. Because I knew that I needed some help, and I wasn't getting help the other way, man. It just wasn't working. So I started going to AA, and I started taking it seriously, and I found somebody in there who was actually who had actually been doing it for a long time, and I asked him to help me, and we went through some steps, and it was the first step was pretty easy. I knew that I was an alcoholic, and I knew that my life was unmanageable because, I mean, I had all of the evidence, you know. I'm kind of an evidence-based kind of guy, and I had all the evidence. I mean, I'm sitting in prison with a freaking murderer, and I was drunk and high at the time, so yeah. But the God thing was really hard for me, very, very hard. But they also had a program in there called the LTOP program, the Long-Term Offenders Program, because they were starting to let lifers out. For a long time, they wouldn't let us out. And so they were starting to let us out, and they wanted to have a program in there for us, so that they wouldn't let us out the same people that went in, so that we could get some help. And the people in there were very nice, and they were very knowledgeable. And I actually had some people who sat down and said, "Okay, Eddie, what's going on with you? What's happening? What's going on?" And we did some real work, and I could sit and tell them really what was going on with me. Because, you know, the psychiatrist in there that work for the state, their books are open, anybody can come and see them. These people, they could not, whatever I told them, they couldn't go and tell anybody. So I could be really very, very honest with them. And so I could sit and I could talk to them. And this was the first time I could really sit and tell people what was really going on with me. And then they got to know me, and then they would say, "Well, Eddie, have you ever thought of this? Have you ever thought that your mother was 16 years old when she had you, and you ended up with a woman who was 16 years older than you, and you've been mad at the world forever, and you ended up killing a woman that was 16 years older than you. Do you think that maybe that's where your anger came from?" And so that began to open up the door for me, because I was just mad at my mother for so long, and I just didn't want to mention it. I didn't want to think about it. And I used her for a long time to get drunk and to get loaded. And I used the foster system. And I used the educational system, because I believed that nobody took care of me. You know, that little boy in me was always hurting, because I always believed that nobody took care of me. And so that's why I was so mad at the world. And I couldn't understand that until somebody who was sitting on the outside looking in could actually say, "Maybe this is what's going on with you." And that was the beginning of my healing. You know, I did some extensive work in there. You know, we had we had substance abuse groups and anger management groups and victims impact groups that helped me to understand other people and not hate people, because I hated people. And I used to tell people in there, "Dude, I hate you, man. Don't talk to me. I hate you guys. Eddie, why don't you come outside? Because I don't want to be around y'all. I hate y'all. Nobody want to deal with y'all." And I really hated people, and I just didn't know why. And until I started working on me and working on these steps, really working on them, and talking to the people in AA, and listening to, getting to know some of the people that came in on the hospitals and institutions panels, really getting to know them and talk to them, that's when I started getting some help. That's when it started to click for me. And that's when my life started to get better. And that's when I really started to care. I would always go to the board, and the board members would say, "You know what, Mr. Watts, you're this close, but there's something missing." And I'd walk out of there and go, "Man, these fucking people are crazy. I've done everything that I can. What are they talking about? What's missing?" They could see that I just couldn't understand. I really couldn't understand the core of what was going on with me. And until I could understand that, they wasn't going to let me out. Because, you know, if I if I came, if I got out here and the same kind of situation happened, they wasn't sure how I would handle it. And so I had to learn that, and I had to be very, very honest with myself, and I had to get a honest relationship with this God that I hated for so long or just didn't believe in. Today I can honestly say that I believe in that God. I've seen some miracles happen in my life. I mean, it's a miracle that I'm standing up here tonight talking to you guys. It's a miracle. I'm still amazed by it because I never thought that I would be out here. I've been able to make amends to my aunts and my uncles that saw me when I was drunk. One of them, right before I came to California, told my friend not to bring me back. She said, don't bring him back. She didn't even tell me. She told him. She said, don't bring him back. But I got to make amends to them. And they believe me today because they can hear it and they can see it. And that's been really good. I've gotten to make amends to some of my cousins who were very small, who I neglected when I was young. I've gotten to do these things. I've gotten... I have some real friends today, you know, that I trust, and who trust me. You know, I came to this group, to this room. I got out of prison on February 27th of this year. I came to this room for the first time. The day before Easter, to a meeting, and they welcomed me and told me to come back. You're good. I told them my story, and they said, "Oh, okay, cool. I'm back. We're here." And so I came back the next day on Easter Sunday, and I met Billy, and the secretary asked me to lead the meeting, and I led the meeting here, and I met Billy. And Billy met me after the meeting and said, hey, if you want to go to some more meetings, I know where some more meetings are. And he volunteered to pick me up, because I had no way to get anywhere, volunteered to come pick me up and take me to meetings. And he took me to the Lions Den meeting in Arcot. He introduced me to the men's stag meeting on Thursday night in Arcot, which has become my... my home group. I have commitments in both groups. I bring cookies to the meeting at the Lions Den, and they voted me to tell people to shut up at the men's stag meeting. It's a miracle. It's not a miracle. but yeah, these are miracles that I see in my life. You know, I've gone a long time out here, trying to find jobs, and looked like it just wasn't going to happen. And you know, I got a job today. It's crazy. I got a freaking job. I got a job that in 3 months I'm going to have full medical benefits and a freaking 401k. What kind of shit is that? It's I didn't do it. You know, and at the time when I got that job, I had three other offers for jobs. You know, for a while it was looking like there was nothing going to happen, and then God said, "Okay, well, here you go," and then He sent me to this one. And the people are nice, and my boss is nice, and he really likes my work. I've only worked there a couple of days, but he likes my work. He likes me. It's a miracle. Nobody wanted me to work for him when I was, you know. They were like, man, get the hell out of here. Nobody wanted to be around me. Nobody wanted any of that stuff. It's a miracle. It's a miracle that I have friends today. It's a miracle that my friends bought me a car. It's crazy. Bought me a car. They all got together because they wanted to. I mean, and because they wanted to help me. And they bought me a car. It's crazy. Last night I took that car to one of my friend's houses, and we played Cards Against Humanity. It's a lot of fun. was a lot of fun. In Morro Bay. And when I was leaving our house last night, around about 8:30, I drove off and I forgot to turn my headlights on. And by the time I realized it, I turned my headlights on and there was a cop behind me. So he lit up the lights and I'm like, oh, shit. And I had my friend in the car with me who just got out like 3 weeks ago. He's freaking scared to death. And I told him, I said, you know what, man? Don't worry about it. We're good. We're good, man. We just came from a friend's house who's in AA. We're driving a car that's paid for. It's got insurance. I got my driver's license in my pocket. The tags are up to date. This thing's good, man. We're good. We're just gonna pull over. We're gonna be good. Don't even worry about it. So that's what we did. We pulled over and walked up, and dude, I wasn't even scared, man. That's the first time that shit's ever happened. I wasn't even scared. And we're both on parole for murder, you know? Shit. You know, so he walked up and asked me for the information. I gave him the information, and he's like, are you on probation or parole? And I'm like, yeah, I'm on parole. He said, oh, okay, for what? I said, for murder. I'm like, oh, okay. Backed up a little bit and started getting on the thing, and then he asked my friend, he's like, okay, are you on parole? He's like, yeah, I'm on parole. What are you on parole for murder? And, okay. And he got his stuff, and he was talking on the thing, and he's like, yeah, my dispatcher's kind of tripping out because I got two guys who are on parole for murder, so don't worry about it, you guys are good. So, you know, he took down the information and, you know, I said that it was all good. And, he got us out of the car and he said, well, you know, I'm going to take you guys out of the car. I'm going to search your car. I'm like, okay, cool. Whatever. So he got me out of the car and searched me and said, go sit back there. And got my friend out and he said, so I'm not going to find anything illegal in his car. I said, no. I said, no. He said, you just got it, right? I said, yeah. I said, but I just got it from the person that I just came from her house. And she's in AA, and I know she didn't put nothing up in there. I didn't put nothing up in there. Search all you want. Go ahead. And he searched the car. And he came back, and he didn't even give me a ticket. He said, I really appreciate you guys being so honest and so forthright. And I already called your parole officers. Well, parole officer, we have the same parole officer. And he said, you guys are good. You guys are where you're supposed to be. You're not doing anything wrong. And here you go. Take your stuff and you can be on your way. And that's the miracle of this program to me, man. You know, because I don't worry about that kind of shit no more. You know, when I was doing bad things, I had to worry about stuff. You know, I would have been lying and trying to give false names and you know, all kinds of stuff. Now, you know, I just pull over and say, there you go. You know, that's the Miracle List program. And that's the miracle of me doing the work, because I didn't take him pulling me over personally. You know, because that was a whole lot of my anger in prison. It was aimed at the COs. Because I always took what they did personally. I didn't take what he did personally. So I could be nice and calm and cordial. And he really appreciated that. His sergeant came. Another officer came. And she asked questions. And I gave her all the true answers. Nothing to hide. And that's a Miracle List program. Don't have to lie today. I can tell the truth. Who knows? And you get to walk away. And I get to come to this meeting and share with you guys tonight, because I'm not in jail, because I wasn't out doing something stupid. And even though I got pulled over by a cop after doing 26 years in prison, out on parole for murder, with another parolee in the car, I can still come out to the 1600 Club on Sunday night and share at a meeting. That's the miracle of this program. So all you new guys, all you new people, if you still want to go out there, man, and you still want to run around and run from the cops and And sleep in the gutters, and I know the beer commercials show you all the good beer with the all the little drops going on all down the side and all that shit. They don't show you sleeping in the freaking gutters, standing in front of a fucking Wendy's that's selling 99-cent hamburgers and you can't even buy one because you're living out on the streets and you have nothing. That's why I ended up at. If you want that life, there's the door. Don't have it. But if you want a chance at a new life, man, it's right here. All you got to do is stay here, listen to people, do the work, work the steps. And the steps are very important. Because I had to learn that the alcohol was just how I dealt with the problems that I had inside of me. And until I dealt with those problems, I could never get anywhere. So I want to welcome you guys. I want to tell you to keep coming back. If these people can welcome me into here and ask me to come and share with you guys after what I've been through and after what I've done and care and love me, and some people have come tonight because I'm speaking, that's a miracle. You can get the same thing if you want it and you work for it. With that, I'm gonna get out of here and let you guys do your thing. Thank you guys for letting me share.
Let's give Eddie another round, huh?